the future. There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Hey everybody, it is Wednesday, May 26, 2021. Welcome to the newest edition of Raging Chicken's collection of podcasts. It's the Wednesday show, yes, with Cyril Michaleko. He's a progressive columnist from the Bucks County Courier Times and the Intelligencer, an all-around awesome guy. This show joins Out to Coop Live, our Monday evening interview show, and our Friday politics news roundup, which Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. You can, of course, get all of our shows by subscribing to our podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. And make sure, once you subscribe, you leave us a review. Give us that five-star review. Leave us a review so other people can find the show. Helps other people find the show. The algorithm pushes us up there a little bit. Right? You can do your little part. And you can support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. Your support has helped make today's show possible. And you can help out the show right now by heading over to our YouTube channel if you're not there already. And smash that subscribe button, like the stream for this show, and hit that notification bell so that you know every time that we go live. And make sure to join our Discord server to continue the conversation all week long and into the night. Just join, just click on the link in today's show notes. You just kind of go right down in the show notes. Whether if you listen on the podcast, it'll be in the podcast show notes. If you're listening live right now on YouTube, watching us right now, boom, hit that link and you can join us in the Discord server. We're at the live chat channel usually during the show and usually hang out in the lounge later on. And a special shout out goes to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. You can check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at @SongADayMan. That's with two N's, @SongADayMan on Twitter. Yes, it is the second episode of the Wednesday show. I think we're just settling on the Wednesday show. It's kind of like a, you know, it's the Wednesday show because it's Wednesday. Today we'll be talking once again about Cyril's latest column, and this one, Only a Political Uprising Could Save PA's Higher Education System. Maybe talk a little bit about reclaiming our political imagination for organized action and what stories Cyril is cooking up for future columns. And maybe if we get a chance, we'll check in on new reporting from Axios on right-wing political action committee or PAC funding of school board elections called the 1776 Project. And then there's, of course, the Keeping Kids in School PAC, which is active right here in Eastern PA. So much. So, Cyril, man, welcome, man. Great to see you again.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Hey, you got it. So, you know, once again, true to form, you've come out with a column, which is upping the game on progressive discourse on the state system of higher education, what's going on with this consolidation plans of the state system, what's happening with the redesign plans and so on. So for those folks who haven't had a chance to check out the column yet, would you give us a little kind of a window into kind of your reporting there?
Sure. I mean, I was just kind of like listening and reading about what labor and students, what their concerns were about Chancellor Greenstein's plans and how this whole process has been, you know, undemocratic. There's been really no transparency. And that's reflected in APSCoF's survey that they did with the six schools that are slated to be consolidated into two universities. I mean, a whopping 8% support consolidation, right?
8%, that's amazing. I mean, that's like, that's practically a majority, right?
Yeah, exactly. So like the problem is like and this is something that you kind of pointed out to me. He came here as a result of shopping around for the perfect kind of with the ideal conditions for him to kind of push through this like technocratic, neoliberal, you know, austerity reforms to public higher education in the state. Why he's doing that? I mean, obviously part of it's ideology. You know, I know some of his writings were at the were published at the World Economic Forum, so maybe he wants to go back to Davos and be and tell his story, and kind of you know, be the celebrity of the moment, based on the damage that he did to or he could potentially do to Pennsylvania's public education system. But all of this is part of it. You know, we can't like place the blame just on him. Like this, there's been a long war against public higher education in the state, dating back decades. The legislature has been starving the system with funding. You know, I think back in, there was a report by the Department of Education that showed between 1990 and 2013, public spending in Pennsylvania on higher education plummeted by 35%. Now, at the same time, get this, prison spending went up 137%, right?
Huh. So, what a coincidence.
Yeah, so we know that like investing in higher education reduces incarceration rates, right? So right. When you're doing the opposite, you're increasing it, and then you're creating profits for the whole prison industrial complex, which you're actually putting the investments that you should be putting into public higher education to.
I think this is an absolutely critical point, right? Because I mean, on the one hand, there's, you know, Greenstein, right? And we need to look at who he is, what he's doing, where he comes from. And, you know, the fact right now, he's basically telegraphing his next move. He's appearing on all these podcasts. He's going to all these forums. He's talking about the bold mission that they're kind of, you know, involved in, and the need to, you know, stand up and have courage in the face of resistance from faculty, students, community members, and basically everyone else but him. Right. So that's important. But putting it in that context is critical, because I think, you know, I'm reminded of, you know, Naomi Klein's whole argument about disaster capitalism or the shock doctrine. Right. Is that on the one hand, there's the shocks that come in terms of natural disasters, but then there's the created ones. Right. The ones that are about bleeding dry, those kind of public assets that create that sense of crisis where people are suddenly open to possibilities that they were not open to before. And I watched, for example, State Senator Judy Schwenk in all of this, right? Somebody who's been a supporter of Pashin is on the Education Committee. And some of the latest hearings, she's been actually kind of out there being like, well, let's see how we can tweak this. Let's take into consideration, like, you know, it's like she's been sipping on that Kool-Aid a little bit. So, I mean, you can't have, in some sense, Greenstein can't come into Pennsylvania and be successful in these projects without that kind of 40 years, 30 years of bleeding dry of public higher ed. So I think that is such an important point to kind of just underscore in your piece.
No, absolutely. And, you know, then look like after more recently, like after the Republican recession of 2008 with the Bush administration, you know, those trends, you know, continued to drop. I mean, like center on budget and policy priorities. I think the report was released in February, said that between 2008 and 2019, that drop continued by 33.4%. And so what happens, like the burden of the cost of higher education shifts to tuition, right? And that's placed on the shoulders of working class, poor, and communities of color. These students and families, they are shouldering the burden of a system that's supposed to be a vehicle of social mobility for them.
Exactly.
So like right now, it's just like, if you look at tuition fees, room and board, et cetera, that accounts for like 34% of the median income of all pay families. And if you like break it down by race, for blacks, it jumps up to 56%, Latinos 48%, which is worse in the nation. Like Pennsylvanians should be not only embarrassed, but outraged,
yes.
Right?
Absolutely. And, you know, and I think that what I found about your piece that was especially absent or from the public discourse, right, in terms of the way that this has been reported on and very much in the way that it's been I even made sense of by some kind of constituents, right, including kind of, you know, say whether us within the as faculty members or as students or community members, is that somehow if we just kind of are able to push on the process a little bit, you know, we're able to kind of get these facts out or get our word out that that's somehow going to change direction. But, you know, you make this point, right? I mean, not to kind of, you know, give the kicker here, but I'm going to give the kicker. Like, you know, just I want to kind of look at the end of your piece here. And you say, you know, it goes right to your title, right? It says, back in 2018, educators in red states such as West Virginia, Kentucky, and Oklahoma engaged in wildcat strikes to make their demands met. There's a thought. Right. And throughout this piece, you're basically making this point, right? You know, not saying like, okay, you know, everybody just wildcat right now. I mean, that's not the thing. But the whole idea is that it's this organized resistance is the only thing that's really going to get the goods in this case.
No, absolutely. I mean, on the one hand, like you said, like, yes, of course, you have to engage in the process, right? And try to kind of like get your message out. But, you know, Greenstein made it apparently clear, you know, with his mafia tactics when he said, well, if you don't do what I want, then I'm going to ask to dissolve the system. So, like, that's what you're working with, right? So if
exactly.
You know, he's being clear. I give him credit for being honest, right?
Yep.
Those are his tactics, right? So you have to fight fire with fire. And so, you know, what I talked to you about was kind of like this movement moment that happened, like, back in 2016, when the faculty and staff went on strike successfully, and, you know, about all the, like, the organizing across unions, across departments, student solidarity, walking out in solidarity with faculty, engaging in other actions across the state. And, you know, this is the type of thing, unfortunately, like, that didn't continue, and this is right. What needs to happen. That needs to be sustained. It can't be like just like issue by issue reactionary. It has to be a kind of proactive approach. And we have to engage, like you said, in the community too, because Greenstein's plan, akin to factory closures in a lot of these communities, based on the what is it? Political Economic Research Institute report, or the,
yeah,
the Perry report.
The Perry report out of UMass. Yeah, exactly. And you're, you know, you were talking about like the total, you know, direct job losses of over 1,500 job losses. You're talking about the secondary impacts, that is the impacts in the communities that brings those job losses in the state over 2,200 people. That, I mean, that's absolutely huge. And so the question is that, you know, if we want to prevent the plant closures, right, in terms of the job losses, then how do we do this? I mean, on the one hand, you need the inside game, right? And, you know, if you look at the history and social movements, that this has been, you know, the way these things work, is that you've got the inside game. You've got people that are kind of, you know, are, you know, doing the negotiations, kind of following through, making the case, going to public hearings and things like this. But that doesn't win if the other side is not playing the same game. So the only way that you gain power when you're the kind of ones without the power, right, is to have the people on the outside pushing hard. Right. And, you know, we can look at from the history of like the American Revolution. We can look at the civil rights movement. We can look at suffrage. We can look at, you know, I mean, name your social movement. Right. And you've got this inside outside strategy, which is absolutely critical. And, you know, one of the things that I found interesting is we talked a little bit about this before the show. And in Red State, Blue State. Right. And Eric Blank's piece in that book, I mean, Red State, Blue State.
Red State Revolt.
I'm sorry. Red State Revolt. Where we, you know, he documents the, you know, these, this uprising of public school teachers, right, kind of across the states of, say, Kentucky, and kind of, you know, throughout areas that were many cases work right to work. And the unions initially were fundamentally opposed to what they were doing, right? They're like, oh my God, until they found out that they were being successful. And then the leadership got on board, right? And so I think that there's this, you know, this kind of dynamic too as well, where, you know, the movements can actually show what's possible, what's political possible, and to kind of expand our imagination of how we think about being successful in organizing. And I think that's a really kind of important lesson to kind of revisit if we're going to have, you know, if, you know, Naomi Klein again talks about the need to build muscular movements, right? Which means you need to practice, you need to exercise those muscles, right? In order to be strong when it comes to kind of critical points.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. And you know, I would recommend the book for everyone, because there's a lot of lessons to learn about like organizing the processes and, you know, the value of it, because, you know, as individuals, we're powerless, right? It's only when we kind of build unity and solidarity and engage in political action that our voices, like, really get heard. And, you know, these red state revolts in West Virginia and Arizona and Oklahoma, they weren't spontaneous, right? Like, teachers were kind of like working up to that, right? For months, working through kind of contradictions and disagreements. And in the end, you know, it was an uprising, right? Because you had Republican support, Democrat support, you know, white people of color. You know, obviously everything wasn't perfect, right? And there are still some issues. But there's still, like you said, like the organizing and the direct action, it got the goods. And, you know, another thing to remember is just, you know, we shouldn't look at just like, oh, these are like backwards, like red states that aren't like taking care of our teachers because we, in education, because we know in Pennsylvania, you know, in the liberal Northeast, we're dealing with the same exact issues. And, you know, while we can place a lot or a majority of the blame at the feet of Republicans, we have to remember that there's been a shift to the right by Democrats, starting with like Clinton in the 90s. And that continued with Obama with regards to, you know, austerity, taxation, as well as the privatization of education.
Absolutely. And so, you know, again, this is all speaks to, you know, what we've talked about as kind of as long as Raising Chicken has been around, right, has been the focus on kind of community movements, right, a building kind of solidarity. And, you know, that kind of that line, which you hear us say over and over again, is direct action gets the goods, right? And that is not a dismissal of the absolutely critical work of, you know, getting progressives elected to office, right? Of doing the insider kind of negotiation strategies that you need to have effective, say, contracts at a union kind of situation. But the idea, it's a theory of power, right? And the theory of power is that if we want to enable our progressive legislators, if we want to enable our union leadership, if we want to kind of enable, say, any sort of progressive future, then we need to be having that concentration and the support of the kind of movements on the ground. And, you know, I don't know if you caught any of this, but on our Monday show, we had a couple people call in, and it was great. I had Nick Marcel, who's from Westchester University, a couple weeks back, along with Alex Carlesis, about their piece about neoliberalism in higher education. And they started this group called Posse Defenders. We kind of connected them up with a KU activist group, right? Students are doing activist work at Kutztown University, and they got together in their meeting last week, right? And they're looking to expand their organizing, right? You know, and in some sense, this is precisely what we had working with the PA Student Power Network before that kind of, like, you know, fell apart for a variety of different reasons. But I think that's the kind of model we need to, but also including faculty and staff and community members too as well.
No, I mean, absolutely. Like that the work that they're already doing in the short time that they began has been incredible. And this is where you have to start. And, you know, I mean, the message is really simple, right? Fund our schools. That's it. Like, that's what you want. That's what you're pushing. And then that lifts all boats. That helps everyone. Like, when you have an educated citizenry, they're more engaged in the democratic process. They earn more. They're paying higher taxes to fund these kind of like social programs and social goods, right? And so it's about, you know, what they're doing and, you know, and what's happened before and what needs to be re-engaged is just kind of like creating this kind of culture of not just resistance, but just kind of like being engaged in your life, right? I mean, there was one quote from this high school student in Oklahoma in Red State Revolt by Eric Blank, saying like, our teachers are setting an example of bravery by standing up to ignorance and inaction, right? So this is like, you know, in doing this is almost like a civics lesson, right?
Exactly.
For everyone involved, including the community.
Absolutely. So, I mean, 100%. I mean, this is why, and, you know, we've talked, Cyril and I talked a little bit offline too as well about, you know, in future shows down the road, once we get this kind of going on, we can start looking at some of these folks that are doing that kind of work, like Eric Blank, right? And the possibilities of bringing some of those voices into the show to kind of really kind of deepen out that whole question about power, right? This is one thing that Saul Alinsky said that, you know, there's, you know, all sorts of contradictions in Saul Alinsky's work, but one of the things that he always talked about is the need to talk about power. Right. And what's the theory of power? Because not only is we have to be thinking about the messaging of fund our schools, right? We have to be thinking about the unset of that statement. And if you don't, what? Right. And that's on us, right? To think about what's the consequence that is associated with that. What happens if they don't do what we're asking of them to do? Right. And I don't mean like the kind of garbage that we see with like the insurrection stuff in January 6th. I'm not talking about that, but I'm talking about organized nonviolent kind of social movements, right? And how you begin to organize that for political power. So, you know, I think that, you know, one of the things I just want to bring this up quickly before we talk about your, you know, what you got kind of got in the hopper, kind of where you go from here. I just was, you know, to see reporting start coming out this week. Axios had this piece that just came out yesterday about the right wing PAC that is funding school board elections. This is the 1776 Project, the kind of anti-critical race theory and all this stuff. You know, and again, once again, we see these networks of billionaire donors that are getting involved with school board elections. And I'm thinking like, yeah, there you go. Like it's this is clear why Cyril's paying so much attention to what's going on, like in these school boards, why you're kind of on your Substack, why you're making sure to highlight these progressive school board candidates across the area. And now we're finding out even more about this Keeping Kids in School PAC that's active right here in Eastern Pennsylvania. If you go to their website, there's a link in the show notes. You can see all the candidates they're supporting. And guess who they're supporting? QAnon folks, right? The right-wing extremists, right? The kind of deniers of the, you know, the anti-maskers, right? All these people are being supported. So, I mean, so kudos to you to kind of getting out ahead of that and digging down into these school board elections because it's absolutely critical.
No, yeah, and thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's not only critical, it's just dangerous, right? I mean, exactly. Like you said, like, who wants, like, QAnon folks, like, pro-insurrectionist, pro-big lie folks, like, setting curriculum, right? And education policies for schools. You know,
well, I can tell you in my district, right, in the Pennridge district, I can tell you who wants it. The Republican Party wants it. Republican voters want it. I mean, they just kind of they handed the nomination to a QAnon supporter, right? Sure. To Chaykin. So we know that there are constituents out there who are pushing for this stuff. And again, this is the power politics of school board. Anyways, I don't want to get us kind of too far afray here, but
sure. No, yeah. I mean, you know, absolutely. Like I said, like there's very like dangerous people like running locally. I mean, dangerous like with their like, you know, warped ideas and ideology from their bigotry. And I think there was one, the woman running in Palisades, Cora Landis, was just like posted an article like, what if the progress progressives brag about is leading us to hell, not heaven? These are the type of people that we have to contend with. And like, this is why it's so important. Like, we need to get involved in like all sorts of races. Like, we cannot take anything for granted, right? You know, from school board to state rep to U.S. congressional representative, like we need to, you know, we need to try to find the time or if we have the resources to share, to kind of, you know, spread that kind of love and solidarity across the board.
100%. And all the more reasons why, and again, Cyril and I decided to be even doing this show, right? The idea is that we need to be kind of supporting each other, right? And kind of, and, you know, kind of lifting up all our voices and expanding our networks. And so that, you know, we're able to kind of have multiple eyes on one thing and it's not all on somebody's back if we're going to prevent, if we're going to have sustainable resistance going forward. So, so let me ask you this then. So what do you, you know, what do you got going on in the hopper, right? What's you got cooking over there in the kind of, the Cyril, you know, workshop, as you will.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, transportation and infrastructure is, a big issue, you know, just not just nationally, but here in Pennsylvania. It speaks to, us dealing with climate change. There's economic implications, job implications. So right now in Pennsylvania, you know, funding for transportation that began in and I think it was like 2013, is set to expire in 2012. So I'm going to be talking about how there's this kind of like blue-green alliance to try to push Harrisburg to start working on legislation now so that we have something lined up so that we can not only like maintain the public transit systems that we have across the state. And obviously this is like big for like Philadelphia and the suburbs, but you know, it even, you know, that even kind of like, it impacts communities like, you know, across the state, like from sure. Allentown and obviously like, you know, big urban areas like Pittsburgh. So, you know, what we need to do is we need to find funding that's not only going to maintain it, but expand it, because we see that this is, again, it's a working class issue, right? This public transportation disproportionately impacts working class and communities of color, you know, as well as like air quality, right? Which has to do 100%, with lack of public transportation.
So well, you know, and on this score too, as well, if you remember when Biden came out to Pittsburgh to give his got a big infrastructure talk and things like this, one of the graphs that was that got rolled out was about these train lines, right, that have been underserved or had been kind of taken offline for a while, that that infrastructure plan could directly impact, right, into bringing some of those train lines back online that weren't serving just kind of like, you know, the main line of Philadelphia, but were actually serving, you know, people in central Pennsylvania, right, in the Lehigh Valley and so on. So some of the legislation that's being proposed in the state too, to be able to say, okay, if this infrastructure bill gets planned, to basically get it in place already, right? Kind of what you're alluding to, get it in place already about where this money goes. So don't leave it in the hands of these kind of like, you know, right-wing nut jobs over here, excuse me, but let's actually plan ahead of time so that we can get right to work. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, and it should be something that's like bipartisan. Right. You know, like the only reason why, especially totally. like suburban, you know, Republican state senators, et cetera, you know, this impacts their community. So if they're actually like serving to represent their community, they're going to place this or prioritize this above any kind of like partisan, you know, hackery that they might have in mind to kind of make Governor Wolf like a lame duck.
I agree, especially when you have communities which are going to see, they're going to be able to see what the direct impact is going to be. And it's going to be extraordinarily hard for a legislator like a central PA or the Lehigh Valley or something like this, who's a Republican, to sit there and say, no, I'm against it. Right. It's an easy win for them. Right. Just to be able to kind of say you're supporting the community if they want to hold on to political power. And it's a way, like you said, as a potential bipartisan kind of approach to it. So excellent.
Great.
Cool. So infrastructure it is. Fantastic. So, man, any other kind of closing thoughts you got on the what's going on this week in PA?
I mean, you know, I was thinking back to those, you know, the amendments that like stripped Governor Wolf of, you know, his emergency powers.
Yeah.
And if you think about it on this off year, it's like maybe about 13-14% of the voting population decided to change the Constitution.
Yep.
So maybe there needs to be a different approach with that. Maybe if we're going to change the Constitution, that should be in a presidential election year, when you know that you're going to have like maximum turnout. It doesn't surprise me that the Republicans, you know, put this forward now, right, rather than, you know, totally. In November.
No, and it also, I think it actually shows some of the gap between what we see in our social media feeds versus who's actually turning out and who's kind of aware of these things. Because, you know, I have to say, if you just follow just, you know, just what was happening on Twitter or just happening a lot of social media, I think there was a lot of organizations, a lot of people that are doing an excellent job of communicating, like, you know, no, no, yes, yes, right, on those first four things. And I think that was better done in the social media space than I've seen it done before, which is great. But it also shows you the folks that are turning out, right, in those elections are not necessarily on Twitter all day long, right? And we know it's too, as well as actually the people who are turning out, even if they're, you know, people who regularly vote and are kind of well interested, the way that they word these things is designed to trick people, right? So if you don't know anything kind of going in there, you know, you're doing your best guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And just like, you know, there's limits to collectivism, right? And social media organizing.
Absolutely. 100%. 100%. Well, excellent. Well, Cyril, man, this is great that we're going to be doing this more often.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, and this is going to be part of our regular feature here as part of the Raging Chicken family of podcasts, right? you're going to see a bunch of changes that are going to be coming up. I've already kind of telegraphed some of this stuff to y'all about changes on the website where we're going to bring everything together so it's going to be easy to find all the different podcasts. Looking at ways that, say, for example, if you're really interested, you only got a half an hour because we're going to try to keep the show at around a half an hour, maybe 40 minutes tops, just so it's kind of easy to kind of listen to, easy to kind of come in. And we're looking for ways of kind of setting that up so that if you want to pull in just this podcast, like just for the Wednesday show, you'll be able to kind of listen just the Wednesday show. For now, you'll be able to find all of that. They are sorted. So if you actually went to our Podbean thing, you can actually just click on the Wednesday show and it'll sort just the Wednesday shows if you want to see those. But this is going to, I'm very excited about this, and I'm excited about what this actually means in terms of establishing some even a stronger presence right here in Bucks County, because I think this is going to be a bellwether county going forward for quite some time.
Absolutely. Thanks, Kevin.
All right, Cyril, take it easy. Well, thank you all for tuning in. Thanks for jumping on the YouTube. Make sure before you leave today that you hit that subscribe button, that you like the stream, and you hit that notification bell so that you know every time we go live. We will be back. Are we doing this next week? We come back next week? We're going to do 2 weeks again.
Sure, let's do it.
All right, let's do it. We'll see you next week. This is how we roll, everybody. This is how we roll. All right, this is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Thank you all for tuning in. And don't forget to join us this Friday for our politics roundup with Sean Kitchen about the good, the bad, the ugly in state and national politics. And for next Monday, we'll be back to an interview show. So we'll see you soon.
See ya! Bye.